Of Yisrael to the non-Jews. Mechabel es Hashem, umyakashim avodazor lahashiva. He is creating Yechol Hashem, and he's making the avodazor greater. And many of the poskim explain that it's not necessarily avodazor, even if it's not avodazor. You find this in the Rishonim already. It means that you're making secular law more powerful and more important than Torah law. So let's focus on this for a moment. And this is really one of the critical points about our guys. Very often people will say, I'm sure you've heard it, I know I've heard it a lot, that Bezdin, they're a bunch of ganavim, Bezdin, they're a bunch of crooks, they're corrupt, and so on and so forth. So are there any rotten apples? There certainly are. And definitely, one of the things that a person should be careful about when going to Beis Din, people make the mistake. The way judicial proceedings work in Torah law also is supposed to be in a professional way. And therefore, first of all, make sure to go to a Beis Din that is professional. Second of all, a lawyer that represents himself as a fool for a lawyer. For a client. So that is definitely the case when it comes to Torah law. Especially because most of us, myself included, are not proficient enough to know exactly what the Tainas are. To understand the Tainas, you need to know so much. We're going to see as we start to go into one siman in Shulchan Aruch. It is so vast. Chayshim Mishpat is so elaborate and so all-inclusive. Then you need to know what your tainas are. So the best thing, if you're dealing with a serious dindera, get yourself a tayin. A tayin is a lawyer. You get yourself a good tayin that understands Jewish law and knows what the tainas are. Now, as far as them being crooks, I deal, unfortunately, with secular law from time to time, different people that are in different cases. And very often, people don't feel that they're getting necessarily a fair judgment in that case either. Do you really think that a jury that is filled with a bunch of hilarious are going to be...
They couldn't get on a jury.
What?
They couldn't even get on a jury.
It's the first time they're working in years. And they're going to be fear. They're looking at it from a very fear perspective. A Talmud Chacham that sits and studies Torah, so many times I hear people say, oh, they're crooks. Take the Cleveland Beis Din. I've heard people talk about the Cleveland Beis Din. I'm not talking about right now, it's being set up differently. It is set up differently. But the way it was for many years. I'm not going into the way they did things. I don't know the way they did things. I'm not getting involved in that. But for somebody to say that they're a crook, why are they a crook? What are they gaining? Somebody thinks, no, there's a rich balabas, so he's giving a lot. I can tell you, rich balabas doesn't give anything. It's not true. Rav Groomer did not get anything from any rich balabas. It's so with so many things. Fakert, the judge is making a nice salary, and a judge might feel that he can push himself further in his position by showing how progressive he is, how liberal he is, or if the tide has turned, he shows how conservative he is, whatever it is, but he has agendas. He has more agendas. In Torah, the only agenda that a person could have if they want to do Shalom Lishma is to prove that they're a Talmud Chacham. That's really the only way to make it in Torah law. So it's not like somebody's going to get ashamed yet. He's always against the lady, or he's always against the man, and he's going to gain something. In Beis Din, any Beis Din at all is not much of anything like that. The only thing that you'll ever be able to push is, he knows a lot. So if a guy wants to do Shalei Lishma, the only Shalei Lishma he can do is be a big Talmud Chacham. You have a question?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest problem that we all have with the idea of a Beis Din is, for instance, Schottenstein. You're going to go up and give a shot. Steve, what rub is going to have the chutzpah to decide for you against Shabbos? And then the other thing is enforcement. Even if you win the case, the guy says a fafdiron, and he walks away, what are you going to do to make him collect? So from the tut stadim, as a
okay, so a classical case. Let's take your case. Perfect case. We're going to deal with the first part, and then we'll get to the second part. With regard to the first part, there definitely is such a thing in that city. The marshal, I think I could say it's well known, for a person to say that somebody is supporting many of the organizations in a city, and because of that they don't want to go to a Beis Din in the city with that person, that is a reasonable taina, and very often Dayanim will say, I can't have shaychus to that. I know right now we just had a dintera, and it was two people from the Heights, and they dafka wanted a dayan from this side of town, which made sense. I don't know either of them. I don't care about either of them. I know them to take a chance. I didn't know them more than that. So that's a very valid taina. You got in that shul, I got in this shul, you're a big baal bus in this shul, you're a big baal over here. Nobody in the room would know either of them. I shouldn't say nobody. Maybe five of you know. But so then that's a valid taina. But take a case of Jay Schottenstein. I don't think any Rav would have any issue passing against him. If you're in Columbus, maybe, what do I have from Jay Johnson? Never gave me a free arts role. Well, I'm being serious. I have no issue at all.
Yeah, but I mean, indirectly he could hurt Rav. He could call his cover in Cleveland and say,
oh, hey, most Sayonim, if they're being honest, they will not suffer.
In
secular court also you could have those pressures. And over there, you know him, okay. So, you need to know more people maybe. It's not a smaller world. But any Rav does not have any problem. I'll be honest with you. One dinner that I was involved in, I got a call from a very hush of a person who's a lot older than me, and said, I heard that you're sitting on this dinner. Said, I am, but if you want to talk to me about it, it has to be in Beis Din. The person can't be upset at you. I'm not saying, no, I'm not willing to listen to you. Come and talk to Beis Din, no problem. There's nothing on the side. Now, that is an issue that maybe Beis Din has to work on. I'm not saying not. Beis Din, it's very important for Beis Din to act very professionally and to recognize when they're involved in a case, they have to deal with it completely in a professional way. But the idea that, oh, this guy has money, so therefore he's doing it, nobody ever gets anything from the guy. And, well, he's enjoying it because he sits on the court, so he's going to get $50 for a sitting fee. If your dying is going to sell himself for 50 bucks, there are a lot bigger problems.
You can't force an income to go to outside of the room. In other words, let's say it's in Jeff's case.
You do have a right to ask the Beis Din, and I would argue on somebody's behalf. If anybody here had a case that involved somebody that was truly a big personality, big enough that Cleveland Heights would be affected and so on and so forth, and there are no Dayanim on the court, you don't have three Dayanim that are not affected by this individual, not just he has some money so therefore the guy's not going to talk about it. It doesn't work that way. It means that he's supporting their Meisin and so on and so forth. Certainly, Beis Din would say you have to take an outside Beis Din.
It would change Beis Din itself and say, even though we're the local Beis Din, we know the Netan has
a right. Maybe we have to hire guys from out of town to come in, and there might be expenses because of it, but we have to deal with it.
I'm not talking a small town community like Cleveland. We have a Beis Din that we can maybe have a little trust in the system. That I can hire a time, and someone can hire a time. He might be able to hire a better time than me. And now we have Torah that the Beis Din has to follow. It's not like, oh, I think it's this way or that way. We're following the halach, right? So a time really should be able to drop a case and figure this out. But a better time in history showed better results.
100%.
Okay. Now in Cleveland, again, we're a small community. We might have a small Beis Din, and we might be a little more focused. Versus go to New York, where Beis Din is a business. It's a profitable business every day that people come in, and a better times will get a better result.
They should get a better result. They're a better lawyer.
I got it, but there's still take
it's not. You're going to see there are machlokes in on every single nekuda. So if you're going to highlight Chuvas Chassam Sefer, Chuvas Rajba, Chuvas Marib, Chuvas Marshak, the Dayanim are going to get impressed by that. And they might not have every Chuvas Kalish in their repertoire. So you have to bring it forward. You can't expect them to know every single thing.
No, I'm talking a straightforward case. Let it be getting,
Most things are not straightforward.
I'm not talking there is a...
We'll get to straightforward. We'll see how straightforward things are.
Was there always a toy involved? They came to his...
I don't know. They probably knew enough to be their own thing.
Poor man comes there, he has to hire a toy.
That's the way it goes, yes. It works that way in secular court also. I just had somebody recently who actually, I was very happy about it. He said he went to Beis Din because he wanted to save money. He said if he would have gone to secular court, it would have cost him $20,000. He went to Beis Din, it cost him $1,000. What?
Today, we have two people come in front of the Beis Din. They dress differently. Mm-hmm. We tell the more wealthy person to buy clothes for the poorer person. So we do that.
I don't know if it is done so quickly.
Someone
comes to
the suit, another person.
Right. I don't know.
Paint his clothes.
That's a good question. I don't know if Beis Din would or not. I don't know. That's a good point.
What about the second part, the enforcement issue?
Okay, so now the enforcement issue is a much more serious issue. But first of all, I'm going to just mention one Beis Din. There are Batei Dinim that do not have good reputations. I don't know about them intimately. I can't say one way or the other. There is one Beis Din that I speak to some of the Dayanim from time to time, and I know their protocol and everything, and some people don't like them for maybe their Piskei Din. But if you want a professional, honest Beis Din on the East Coast, Meisharim. Meisharim is a very honest, professional Beis Din.
This shows you found a needle in the haystack. I mean, there's like 50 in the...
I know them. Maybe all 50 are great. I have no idea. I don't know any that's corrupt. And they might all be corrupt. I have no idea. I'm not intimately involved with any of them. There is one other one in Lakewood that's good. But Meisharim, I personally like just because of their professionalism. Everything is dealt... Some people are more into this, some people aren't. They will never hear something on the phone. They will never... Everything has to be processed and it's done in a very professional manner. Okay, so now, regarding enforcement. So, what they will do, and a good Beis Din should do this, is they will have both parties sign arbitration beforehand. You have to sign arbitration that you are signed on to arbitration. American law recognizes arbitration, and you can pick who the arbitrators are. So they decide that the Beis Din is the arbitrators, are the arbitrators, and then it is enforceable even in American law. That is the most classical way to do it. There are times when, if they're not able to enforce, and these are the facts, we're in Gullis, we don't have police powers, if they are not able to enforce it, they will give a heter to go to Arkadis at that point. And we're going to get to a heter Arkadis hopefully today. Hopefully. Okay.
What about enforcement by doing certain ostracization in the community?
We'll get to that. Okay.
One last quick point. What's the source of the word? Hagos?
Arkadis?
Arkadis.
Don't know.
Literally what it means. What is it?
Arrangements.
The one, the setter uppers. That Orech, like Shulchan Orech, Arkadis, the ones that set.
Is it true, in fact, that when you go to a Beis Din, talks are not available, that they say, do you want Din or Shor? Do you get a choice?
Yes.
You get a choice.
Probably. Usually.
The problem is that you may not be aware of some little technicality that when you get deeper.
That is why you should get a Tanya. Right. You are right. And people think they'll save money by not getting a tayin, and then they regret it, and they don't realize, yes, there are intricacies in halacha that qualify or disqualify and could mess a person up. It's true. That's what the Torah says.
And then Shor, on the other hand, will be very often getting, I hope, some kind of case. Everybody gets that. which is...
It's not necessarily going to be like that. It's usually with an overwhelm, but we have to understand, a lot of people don't like Pshar. This is one of the issues with Meisharim. Meisharim does push Pshar much more. And it's a Taisis in Sanhedrin. Taisis in Sanhedrin says you should always push Pshar. A lot of people don't like it. But you get a choice to say whether you want Pshar or Din. But even Din sometimes will find some rights to one person and most rights.
When you go to bed, the reason you want two things. You want to get some money, whatever, but you also want vindication. I'm sure you're willing to get vindication, no matter how much money you do, okay?
No, you do. But with Pshar, in the Psak, in a Beis Din that issues the Psak and gives their opinion, it will be clear what they really felt.
Is there a system of appeal?
I don't think so. Not familiar with it. Okay. So now, Beis. What happens if both agree to go to Arkais? Reuven and Shimon are having a dispute, and they want to both go to Arkais. So look at the Ramban and Beis. Ramban says, towards the end of the first line, V'afal pishis kiru chachamim shtei akitis eila ka'achas, and we just put it into parentheses, that you're not allowed to go to Adyantis, people that don't know anything, you're not allowed to go in front of a non-Jewish court. Yei shefesh b'neim, shem rotu shnei balei din, if two people say, Reuven and Shimon say, we want to go to three regular guys. We don't care. We don't need them to be Rabbanim. We don't need them to be the Yadim. We want to go to three regular guys. That is okay. And typically, Beis Din nowadays doesn't want to assume that they are professional enough, and therefore they will ask them to accept them as regular people, as a Yadis. That's allowed. However, but, Dr. Ramban, and this is brought by halacha, if they want to go to a non-Jewish court, even if both sides say we want a non-Jewish court, and even if the halacha would be the same as what the secular court is going to paskin, it is usher to go to the secular court. Now, how usher is it? Listen to a language of a Shulchan Aruch, and this is a frightening language. And this is Gimel in the bowl. Usher ladan b'fnei, the Rambam says the same thing. Usher ladan b'fnei dayan ha'yadik chavim. One is not allowed to go to get judged in front of non-Jewish judges.
Are we calling secular court dayan ha'yadik chavim?
Yes.
Why?
That's what I said before, that the Poskim say that it is not Dafka if they chavim this already from Rishonim. It means any secular court that is not Torah. Uva Arkais Shalem, it's referred to, Goyim are referred to as if they chavim throughout Shas. Yes. Uva Arkais Shalem, and you can't go to Arkais Shalem. Afilu B'din Shadonim B'dina Yisrael, even a din that they passed in the same way as us, like Rashi said before. Afilu Mistrati Beis Baladinim Lodim B'fnehim Aser, like we just quoted from the Ramban al Atera. That source is in the Ramban, that even if both parties want to go, they cannot go. Listen to this last line. And if somebody does go to Arkais, Harezer Rasha, he is a Rasha, Uchilu Cheref, Vigidef, Vehirim Yad, Betes Moshe Rabbeinu Olav HaShalom. It is like being an apostate. It's like denouncing the entire Torah's Moshe. Them is fiery words. And if you look in Dalet, the Rabbi Kiva Eger in Shulchan Aruch quotes from the Tashbit. Again, go to the bold, like the second line in. Nichtav b'tzidei. This is Rabbi Kiva Eger wrote on the side in his gloss. V'mahitzi mamon al yidei din arkois. Main came b'din Yisrael. Hamamon gozel b'yadei. If a person does go to arkois and he wins in arkois, it should be gozel. It's a typo. The money is stolen in his hand. V'im kidesh b'zeh ein mikudesh. If eventually he uses that money and marries a woman, he's never married to her. V'upastol la'edis. And he's pasul aid. That means if you go to a chasana and they ask you to sign on a ksuba, or they ask you to be an aid, and you went to Arkais, let's say, sorry, I'm disqualified. I'm not a kosher aid.
What does he add?
That's when it's gozel the other. Otherwise, it might not be stolen in his hand. That's a very good point. But that might not be gzela if not. If it would not be the same. And we'll see how different the laws are. Like any gazlan. Yes?
What happens if someone's called up to be the aid and someone else realizes he
intended
to cover he has the pasal aid?
Probably should go over to him and tell him. Probably should go over to him and tell him.
Is the Christ also considered small claims court?
Any non-Jewish court.
Would a Jewish court bother with it?
Of course.
Yeah? You'll get Dayonim, you'll get...
No, so over there you might agree to take a Yachid.
Yeah.
There, it's a small enough amount. You're not interested in paying court fees or anything.
Right.
So you take a Yachid. You go to one Rav and you both agree on that Dayan. And he paskins the day. So then that gets to Hatarakos, which maybe we'll get to. I said before, hopefully, not sure whether we'll get to. We'll see.
But to clarify, there are instances where basically we'll send you to Arkos.
Yes, that's what we're trying to get to.
That's not going
to
possibly. It's only
No. Correct. Only if you go illegally. There will be times that Pesdin will give you permission to go, which we'll get to, and if you're given permission to go, nothing against you.
If you're called for jury duty and called to be a witness and your case is decided based on your testimony.
And it's two Jews. If it's not two Jews, no problem.
Yeah, let's say two Jews.
So that's one of the sugyas that we'll have to get into. There's a more basic issue, and this comes up regularly. In New York, it comes up regularly. What happens if somebody is an attorney and Reuven is taking Shimon to secular court and he hires Levi to be his attorney? Is he allowed to be an attorney in our case? It's a sugya shlema, which hopefully we'll get to a different time. We will not get to today. Okay, just not happening today. So get to hay. This is the Kesef Kedoshim also in the Shulchan Aruch. He takes it a step further. He says, "Ulkach kosu achreim zav ki ein letzarif la'asora." You cannot count somebody for a minion if he goes to Arkoyis. La tevei barakoyis shogayim shloim b'shus bezdin tzedek. If it was without permission, if permission was not granted by Bezdin, and he goes to Arkoyis, he cannot be counted as a tzedek. Now, I'm not sure what level this is. Just as a caveat, it certainly would not be tefillah b'tzibur. That's clear. That's what the Kesef Kedoshim is saying. He's not counted as a minion, and it would not be Tefillah B'Tzibur. I would imagine you could still say Kaddish HaKadosh, because Rav Moshe has a well-known tshuva, where he says, even if you don't have Shomrei Shabbos, it's not going to be Tefillah B'Tzibur, but you still could say Dvarim Shebekadosh. So this probably would have the same halacha. I can't imagine that it would be
different. What about any other mitzvah? Can you motzi any other mitzvah? Megillah, Shofar?
Probably, yes.
It's okay.
Probably. Okay. So now the question is, why is it so stringent? Why is it such a serious offense? And this is where it ties into Kabbalah Satara. Because what we are doing when we go to a secular court is we are saying, I trust that judge, I trust that jury, I trust that system, I trust the laws, the rationale, and the law and the legal system that was put in place by mortal man. And I am willing to give up Torah for that. Now some people will say, I'm not willing to give up Torah, but the Dayanim don't know Torah. The Dayanim know Torah as well as the judges know what our forefathers, Thomas Jefferson and George Washington, had intended. But this becomes very difficult.
Sometimes somebody might say, okay, I know identical cases in Besdin took 7 years because the Dayanim couldn't come to conclusion, that it was going back and forth. I know in court, there's a law, and I'll be done with it, enforceable, and everything in 2 years. I'll save myself X amount of money. This is why I was going
to. So, first of all, you won't save any money going to court. You won't save any money going to court. No money. Second of all, for every case you could show me that it dragged out in Besdin, there is a problem in Besdin sometimes getting them to sit down. But in court also, sometimes judges, like impossible. You can't get to them for months.
20 minutes a day.
What?
20 minutes a day, horrible things happen.
The judges, the lawyers can have motions and appeals.
There's so many different things that come up. That if you have a good lawyer, they can make it take as long as they want. Okay, so now we're going to touch on a few, what we're starting off with. Yes?
If the whole thing is based on terrorist relations, so why then do we allow them to have lawyers and the basin itself doesn't become the tenant for them? Because in a secular court, it's reasonable doubt. They don't necessarily care about the truth. When it comes to here, if I can hire a better lawyer, then it's not terrorist relations. Then it's I can afford someone who can figure out some loophole to get me through. Why does that not become the responsibility of Dayanim?
Because you can't expect Dayanim to be able to cover every single angle. There are so many complexities and so many different.
If they're dining in case, just like, you know, shouldn't.
No, but for example, sometimes a Tayin will pull out a Tshuvas Chasam Sefer. They don't know every single Tshuva and everything. Now, Shevet Levi wrote a reason why he feels today you go like this.
But I'm getting away from what the truth is versus based.
That's not against the truth.
If I can hire a better lawyer, then.
A better lawyer knows how to show a Peter Moshe that his client has a case.
If the Tohen's better, why isn't he on the basin instead of the basin?
First of all, he's not necessarily a great Talmid Chacham. They can know a lot. But to understand whether it really is applicable at the end of the day or not, that's not necessarily his strength. He just knows a lot, and he does a lot of research. He's not necessarily a through and through Talmid Chacham. He's able to do research, and he invests a lot of time looking through Tshuva.
Maybe they should hire the Tohen to work the basin.
Yeah, people don't want to pay Bezdin fees. They're not going to want to pay the Tohen fees from the Bezdin. Plus, they're going to say you didn't get us a good Tohen.
If you get a Tohen, have a Tohen working for the Bezdin, and then, you know, and his job's for the Bezdin, and then not for parties.
It might be a thought. That's not the way it works.
You have clerks that do all the background work, and they gather all these little, you know, pieces of evidence, or whatever. Stuff, cases to bring to the lawyers and the judges.
It probably boils down to money. That's what I would imagine, but I don't know. Okay, so now let's go through a couple points where it's very different. Number one, and we'll have hopefully opportunities to focus on each one of these. Yerusha, classical case. There's a son and a daughter. Parents get old, aren't well. Who do they live by? The daughter. They feel more comfortable by the daughter. The daughter takes care of them. The daughter cares more about them. And the daughter is taking care of them for 8 years. They're nifter. Al pi din hetero, what happens? 100% to the son. 100% to the son. Our knee-jerk reaction is that's not fair. That is not fair. Why should the son get it all? What do you mean? There's a boy and a girl. They're both children. What are you talking about? She should get much more because she invested so much more time. She did keep it out. That's very nice of her. Yeah, that was she'll get schar for it. But al pi din, she doesn't get anything more. Bottom line is, most people, when they're setting up their estate, most frum people will not set up their estate that way. So the question is, can you do it? Al pi Torah law, are you able to set up your estate differently? You want to give money to your daughter also. You have a daughter that's struggling and has a big family and so on and so forth. Your son never got married and he's living the life and who knows what. So now he's going to take everything. He doesn't need it. And here you have such a good cause. So how can you deal with it? There are ways to deal with it, and it's beyond the scope of it. So it's not so easy to give a gift because usually a parent does not want to give their money away while they're alive.
No, but let's say they do that.
Oh, if they give it while they're alive, that's a simple way. But most parents do not want to give it away while they're alive. Usually not. And sometimes they don't know when they're going to die. So, but bottom line, there are ways to work it. But you have to know how to work it. So this is a typical thing. You sit down, and this you don't need a best thing. But as long as you took care of it before. But this is a typical thing where our mind, because we are Americans, we see just one way, And the Torah didn't necessarily say that that's what justice. Now, are there ways to accommodate it? Because if we're living in this society, it's going to create machlokes when we do it a different way. Yes, the Rambam already talks about it. There definitely are ways, but it has to be addressed with in a professional legal manner. Another case, classical case, comes up unfortunately too often. Man gets divorced. He's worth $5 million. What does he have to give his wife? His ex. He has to give her the ksuba, which, let's say, is $30,000. Maybe $30,000. He might have a chiyuv to support his young children, at least food, maybe to pay tuition also. So there might be some child support. The idea that she gets half the assets is completely antithetical to their. Ohio law is very clear. She gets 50% of the assets. No ifs, ands, or buts. It's Pashta, Halacha, La Ohio, Messinai, 50% of the assets.
What
do you do over here? So now, who brought up Din Mahusa? Abahana, very good. So do you say Din Mahusa Dina? When do you say Din Mahusa Dina? One case that you definitely say Din Mahusa Dina, and I'll just mention it because it's something important, especially for Kiddush Hashem and Chilul Hashem. One place where we say Din Mahusa Dina is with regard to paying taxes. That we have to be honest in paying our taxes. We live in a country, they have tax law. You can use every loophole, but at the end of the day, you're not allowed to steal from taxes. There's a chiyuv to pay taxes. Why? Din d'machusa dina. That is where din d'machusa dina is said. Is it said with regard to these type of laws? We'll see in a Rajbah, which I don't think we'll get to today, that it's not clear at all that it applies to these. In fact, it's pretty clear that it does not apply. Again, are there ways to structure it, though, that you should be able to do it? So Zalman Nechemi Goldberg had a very big chiddush, and there's a lot of literature on this chiddush itself, where he felt that you can set it up beforehand in a certain way to give extra on the ksuba, and set it up with certain language, which we're not going to get to today. But again, so you have Yerusha, you have divorce law. Another classical case where we, as Americans, growing up in 21st century, or 20th century, whichever century you grew up in, find it just one way, and Torah law, it's not that way. Let's say we can prove beyond a reasonable doubt. Let's say even if we have clear rayas according to the Torah also, that I did something, and that caused you $1 million loss. In American law, it is clear. If we can prove beyond a reasonable doubt that I caused Sam $1 million loss, I have to pay that. In Dinei Torah, Grama b'nizakin is potter. If I damaged you $1 million, I'm chayev. If I only caused that, I might be chayev b'dinei shemayim. But b'dinei adam, in Bezdin law, you're potter. And this is one of the most frustrating things. And so often, this is where people will say that Bezdin is crazy. Because we really don't understand this law. I'm not saying I understand, I know it to be true. But it's something that's very hard for us to come to grips with. The guy caused me $1 million loss. He made my whole business go under and everything, messed me up totally. Did he damage it or did he only cause it? He's a cause. But what do you mean? It's $1 million and the emotion gets into it and everything gets into it. So we're going to take one case. We're not going to get to Hetter HaKoyes today. But there's one case at least that I have to share with you just to bring out a point, and we'll see how far we are. And this is part of Matan Torah when we go to Shavuos. I'll end off with a Maisa at the end. This is part of what Matan Torah is all about. Kabbalah Satera, accepting Torah to be above and beyond all mortal law. There was a doctor in Eretz Yisrael delivering a child, OBGYN, delivering a child, a baby. Unfortunately, during the delivery, there suddenly was very heavy stress. it was, I don't know the exact details of the stress, but there was tremendous stress.
On the doctor?
OBGYN, obstetrician. And a baby deliverer. And the team, there were other people on the team, the anesthesiologist, the nurse, whoever else was on the team, said, this is too much stress, you got to do a cesarean. You have to do surgery. The doctor said, based on the stress that she had, there's no way this baby's going to make it. The baby's not going to make it. I'm not going to make her go through a cesarean and recover from it and everything and then not have a baby to show for me. So he said, I'm not doing surgery. It was more stress. The baby was born alive and well with terrible motor damage and very damaged or challenged neurologically. Alive, well, heart beating, but very developmentally was going to suffer terribly. The parents wanted to know, can they sue the doctor? Team or Adim, he definitely should have listened to them. He had this cheshbon of his. They outvoted him. He didn't listen to them. He didn't do the surgery. Had he done the surgery, none of this would have happened, or very possibly none of this would have happened. What? Okay, so there are a number of points here. I think the knee-jerk reaction is, well, yeah, you could sue. If you get it, you get it. If you don't, you don't. What do you mean? The guy, he messed the child up. So there are a number of points here. Even if we would be able to get professional witnesses to say that really the amount of time it was before, there was no reason for him to be so concerned, and in all likelihood, it is highly likely that the damage was done later on. It was not done before they were opting for surgery. Still, it would be a very hard case to bring. Why? Number one, there is a special halacha, and this is in Yerodeis and Shin Lamed Vav and Shulchan Aruch. There is a special halacha to protect doctors. It's a little bit the opposite of malpractice. But if a doctor is performing in his best duty, according to his what he assumes to be doing the right thing, he's not, you know, intentionally going ahead and damaging, and he has rishus to go ahead and work on a person, then even if he damages the person, he is protected. And that's mipnei tikkun olam. That's like a caveat halacha, not fitting into the classical things, but mipnei tikkun olam. Otherwise, doctors will quit because of malpractice insurance. Right? There are doctors that just say they can't deal with malpractice anymore. And number two is, this is not even a grumma. This is not even a cause of damage. He could have done a surgery to save the child. He didn't inflict any damage. He didn't even inflict something that caused damage. What he did do was, he didn't save. Not saving, you can't be mechayev somebody for that.
The concept of failing to do something as being causing a emotion.
That is not caused in Torah law. That is not. There is no right financial. Right. That's being he on the Yom Kippur. He definitely is going to have to deal with it. But
you can't guarantee that the surgery will make a difference.
I'm saying even if you could. I'm saying even if you could assume that it would have. However, so it seems open and shut case. You don't have the right to sue him. However, Rav Yashiv held in this case that who are you suing? You're really suing the insurance company. He's not going to pay anything. The hospital had insurance. The insurance company was based in England. It's a non-Jewish insurance agency. They go with secular law, and they're insuring based on secular law. You have a right to take them directly. Now, the question came up, though, one second. You can't take them directly. You can't call, Ohio Mutual and say, I'm taking you to court. What are you taking me to court? It has to be based on the doctor. It's true But who's going to be the responsible party? Who's the paying party? The paying party is the insurance agents.
It's not solely on the paying party. It's also beside the Chilul Hashem. So if you have two Jewish people going to court, that's a Chilul Hashem.
Since the responsible party is the insurance agency, and the truth is the insurance agency will never accept the Beis Din. If you told the insurance agency, we're taking the doctor to Beis Din, and let's say Beis Din would find him chayev, insurance agency will say, sorry, you got three nice rabbis with white beards, but that doesn't fly for us. We're not writing a check based on that. They need to have a legal malpractice case.
That can't say, I had a situation with a lot of it last week. I was a corneal abrasion of a patient, right? And he wanted to call me up with letters, said, I find that, they owe me $50,000. I said, you know what? I won't charge you for the offices. That's about all I can do. What my master British driver is in, that's it. I called a malpractice carrier and said, you know, how would you feel if this character, I won't call him a human being, wanted to use an arbitration or said, we'd love it. And we'll send out our observer, our attorney. And I said, they may not have the right to be, that's fine. They'll listen to the observer of the proceedings. It saves them so much money. They would love to see arbitration.
Interesting. Interesting.
It turns out on the camera because you want the best information.
But even if that's true, you see, you needed their permission. They have to okay it.
They're covered for.
Right, I'm saying you can't just say, well, I was hired, so now you have to pay. They have to agree to that arbitration.
Also had
so you're really dealing the pay. The one paying is the guy.
Haven't found obligated. We're still going to report to National Commission of Matter, even though we had nothing to report. So the insurance company pays out money for any reason, it gets reported. That's a big problem.
Right. So that was also brought up to Rav Eliashiv. Because Al Pidin, you don't really have a right to cause him secondary problems. You maybe have a right to the money. But by doing so, it's going to be reported and it's going to hurt his reputation. Rav Eliashiv felt that that's not an issue. Because that whatever happens with that, once you have a right to, you don't have to worry about that. So now just a Maisa, and we didn't even get through this. I really ran out of time. I only printed the first page. I had a second page for today also, but we didn't finish the first page, so we're okay. The Avnei Nezer had a chassid. And this chassid was a wealthy man, and he used to come to the Avnei Nezer for Shavuos. He used to come to the Avnei Nezer all the time, but certainly for Shavuos. The week before Shavuos, he was traveling through Russia. He had business across Russia. And roads got blocked. There were heavy rains, whatever it was. You dramatize it however you wish. And he got stuck in the middle of nowhere deep in Russia. No way he's getting back to Poland. No way he's getting any place near the Avnei Nezer. So he starts looking around where he is. Where can he get to in the next day or two before Shavuos? And he hears that there's one town that doesn't have a Jewish community, really, but has some Jews. They have a group of Kantonisten that live there. It was an army area, and there was a group of Kantonisten. Those of you that are familiar with the Kantonisten were children that were conscripted to the Russian army at 10 years old and around that age, and they would be in the army for 25 years. And by the time they came out, obviously, they certainly weren't learned. You had a minion that still went to shul, that was good. But there was not much more than that. They didn't have much more. And this person goes to their shul, and he's going through Shavuos. And he's really just thinking the whole time, I wish I was by the Sachachavi. I wish I was by the Avnei Nezer. How did I end up over here? And he went through the whole Shavuos, and after Shavuos, right away, even though it was already after the Yom Tov, he made his way to the Avnei Nezer just to get a bracha from him. Avnei Nezer asked him what happened. He told him he got stuck in the middle of Russia. I always wonder, like, what about the wives? But I guess that was a different situation. But he tells Avnei Nezer he got stuck in the middle of Russia. Did you have any Yidden? He said it was a minion of Kantonisten. You know, I went to a shul, Kantonisten shul. He said, no. What did you hear? He said, you don't want to hear what I heard. He said, did you hear any different? He said, well, they have one guy that acts like the rabbi. He did say one drasha. The first day before Akdamas, he got up. and he said, we're going to lay Laseres HaDibros today. And Chazal tell us, Im tikabul es haTorah mutav, if you accept the Torah, good. V'im lav, and if not, Shom tehi kvuraschem, there will be your burial place. He said, why does it say Shom tehi kvuraschem? It should say Pai tehi kvuraschem. He's holding a barrel on, he's holding Har Sinai on top of the Yidden like a barrel. He should say, you accept the Torah, it's good. You don't accept the Torah, you're going to die here. Here is going to be your burial place. Why does it say there will be your burial place? And this Cantonist rabbi or whatever he was said, in his humble opinion, he thinks the Pshat is as follows. That generation, they saw Hashem, Kriyas Yamsuf. They were right by Har Sinai. They had Moshe Rabbeinu as a Rebbe. They were in the lap of spiritual luxury. For them, it's no kunst to be Mekabel Torah. Of course they're going to accept the Torah. But Hashem wanted that it should be accepted for every generation that goes on. And even we as Kantanistim, who we haven't seen a sefer in 25 years. We were living under conditions that we weren't able to be religious Jews for years. And now, we're going to have Kabbalah Satera. Hashem was telling them then, every dar, every year, every generation, every society, accept the Torah. And if not, Shum, over there, it might be in the depths of Russia, it might be in America, it might be any place. If we don't accept the Torah, that's our burial place. Avnezer kissed him and said it was kedai to get stuck in Russia to hear one such part. We, Baruch Hashem, don't have the challenges of Cantonism. But very often, we as good Americans have difficulty appreciating, understanding, and respecting Torah law. When we have Kabbalah Satera this Wednesday, we have to think, Abishta, I accept the Torah. I recognize if Chas V'Shalom not accepting it can be Kavura, certainly accepting it will give me life. Ki hein chayim.